As we have moved on from the valley and the dung gate, we come to the fountain gate, which we began to look at last time. The fountain gate was very close to the dung gate. And this gate was at a very strategic location near the pool of Siloam, the old city of David and the water tunnel built by King Hezekiah. And the Gihon spring that fed the water system was an important source of water in the city. A fountain of water never runs dry. That was one of the strengths of Jerusalem. It was built over several fountains of water. And during a siege, they always had water. Now, the fountain gate derived its name from the fact that it was the primary access to the fountain, the Gihon spring. It was Jerusalem's sole perennial source of water. Its gate, built over a number of springs, I believe, was always flowing with water all year round. And this fountain represented the life source of God himself. Now, prior to the captivity, Jeremiah prophesied that of all the sins of Jerusalem for which they were taken into captivity, two were singled out by God as the most severe. He said, "They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water." They had forsaken God and the law which he had kindly given them in his goodness, that they may live right lives, and that they had reduced God to just another God, and they had forsaken him and his law. And this was what God had singled them out for as the two main sins, that they had forsaken the fountain of living water, and they had built for themselves broken cisterns. Now, a cistern was like a well, probably shaped like a goldfish bowl, and it was built into the ground. It had no independent source of water. It is usually dug out by shepherds, and they would use them as a source of water to take their flocks to. But it had no independent source, and they leaked, and it was probably one of these underground cisterns that Joseph was dropped into by his brothers, and there was no way of getting out of it. But with these systems, water was brought from another source, and it, as I say, is held in storage for later use. And the Lord likens those who trust their own resources to those who build these broken cisterns. Their lives, they leak out joy, they leak out peace, they leak out faith and strength. And Jesus has himself encouraged us to come to himself, the spring of living water. We read in John chapter 4, where Jesus, on the last and greatest day of the feast, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice, "If anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink." It may be interesting just to note that on this, the time when Jesus stood up and said this was the feast, the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles, where the people had rejoiced that once again the harvest had been brought in, the whole circuit of spring and summer and sowing and reaping had taken place, and they had a good harvest. And now the cycle began again, and it was a time of dryness. There had not been rain, the harvest had been taken in, and the sunshine, the ground was parched. And on the last day of the feast, particularly, prayer was made that the Lord would again send rain so that the cycle could again begin. And Jesus stood up at the feast and said, if anyone is thirsty like this land and needs replenishing, come to me. I'm the spring of living water. But having said that, I want to move on now to that, just to look at that part of Isaiah which we read in Isaiah chapter 8. Now we read of Siloam in John's Gospel. It was the pool to which Jesus sent the blind man to wash. And we also read of it in Isaiah. And understanding Isaiah chapter 8 throws light on that New Testament mention. Now, Isaiah chapter 8 is probably more familiar because it records one of the longest names of a person in the Bible. And the verses we read have probably been read over because we don't really understand the people or the place. But the pool of Siloam, which was in Jerusalem, near the fountain gate, which the blind man had sent to, was rather an insignificant pool. It was not a great river. Just as Naaman was sent to wash in the murky rivers of the Jordan and complain how much better his great Syrian rivers were. Now, at this particular point in the history of Judah, God's people were in very great trouble. Looming on the horizon were mighty nations seeking their destruction, and they were powerless before them. The cause for their weakness was not that, as a nation, they had lost the race in technology. It was not that their economy had taken a downturn and they became weak and had lost preeminence among the nations. The cause was their sin. The sin that they were committing was that they rejected the waters of Shiloh or Siloam. We read that the Lord also spake unto me again, saying, for as much as this people refuses the waters of Shiloh that go softly and rejoice in Rezin and Remaliah's son. The waters of Shiloh or Siloam refer to a small fountain sending forth a little stream to the city of Jerusalem, referred to in John as sent. It was a brook bubbling up from Mount Zion, which flowed quietly and peacefully through the city. And Shiloh means gentle or quiet, and the root of the word means rest. It was not a great river, it was an insignificant little stream that continually flowed. Now, the people of Judah were in the midst of a siege on their capital city, the city of Jerusalem. And in the midst of that siege, and in the need for defence against their enemies, they refused the waters of Shiloh. They ridiculed the waters of that little brook, which was in the midst of Jerusalem. It was not like the mighty rivers in the capitals of the nations. If you look at an atlas of the world, maybe an older one, perhaps you'll see that most of the capital cities of countries were located on rivers. And that was obviously the main source of trade and wealth in those days. And the capital of Assyria was built upon the Euphrates. The River Nile sustained the kingdom of Egypt. Naaman spoke of the rivers of Damascus, Pharpar and Abana. These were rivers which would provide commerce. And we have London on the Thames, and many other cities we could name that are built upon and around rivers. And of course, these rivers gave also excellent defensive protection. And these rivers were strong and they were overflowed. And it was one of the gripes of the people and the kingdom of Judah and Jerusalem that their city didn't have a river like all the other nations. All it had was Shiloh or Siloam, that little brook. But it was God's provision. And they held it in contempt. That these waters of Shiloh, which flowed through Jerusalem, represented the presence of God's grace in the midst of his people to save them. And therefore, they resented the call of God to trust. The call of God to trust, to repose, to be quiet, to rest in their God. But God says, instead of doing this, they're rejoicing in Rezin and Remaliah's son. Rezin was the king of Syria. Remaliah's son was Pekah. We can read of him briefly in the book of Kings. He was one of the kings at that time, or at that time the king of the 10 tribes of Israel. And these two kings had just formed an alliance against Jerusalem to war against it, but could not prevail. It was something the kings of Israel probably ultimately wanted, to be in control of the whole kingdom, but they were not able to prevail. Now, even though these two kings had been plotting the destruction of Jerusalem, the people of Judah, strangely, they rejoiced in them. They boasted in them, even though they were their enemies. The people were saying, no, there are nations who've got it together. There are some real leaders. There's men of courage and resources with some weight and prestige. We ought to be like them. And in taking this attitude, they refused the waters of Shiloh, which ran softly, and they boasted and desired to be like Rezin and Pekah, these mighty kings at that time. Now, as I said, Jerusalem was built on a mountaintop, not a valley. It had springs and streams, but no mighty river. And the people of Judah well understood the significance of a river in a city. It was very crucial in days of siege and war. And God had said that his people would have a river in the midst of their besieged city. And instead of that, Judah held those waters in contempt. And they rejoiced in Rezin and Pekah. They rejoiced at what those two kings represented. They were envious of them. They represented assertiveness, self-reliance, resourcefulness. And they looked to Assyria for help in their trouble. But the point is that the waters of Shiloh were in Jerusalem. There was no need for the people to go up and down throughout the land, looking here and there for a way of salvation and help. No need to be forming all types of plans and alliances. It was right in front of them. It was in Jerusalem. It was in the words of the prophet Isaiah, who brought the word of God to them. We have the word of God. It's nigh thee, even in thy mouth. And from this passage here, we can understand this illustration in Psalm 46, where God speaks if there will be a river in Jerusalem. We read in Psalm 46, didn't we? There is a river whose streams shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacle of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. God was in the midst of her, not in the form of a mighty, overflowing, strong, current in river, but in a gentle block, a brook, continually bubbling and flowing and supplying all their needs every day of the year. And so often God is in the midst of his people, just in that gentle, continual supplying of their needs. And so now we move on from this fountain gate, that which supplies all our needs and thirsts, and we move on to the water gate, which is more to do with cleansing, and we will, God willing, look at that next time.